Hello, I'm Anna.
And I'm Bethany, and we're trying to review every Jane Austen adaptation ever.
Welcome to Austen Translation, the only Jane Austen podcast that covers the character's star signs.
That we know of. Right, so this week we watched Bridget Jones's Diary, a loose adaptation about Pride and Prejudice, which I was
based on Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. Obviously a beacon of healthy relationships in that.
Yes.
So I actually wrote some quite detailed notes, but less about the plot, because I've seen Bridget Jones so many times.
I've seen it several times, and like watching it back as an adult is very different to watching it as a teenager.
I mean, I watch it pretty much every Christmas.
I don't know when the last time I watched it was, but it's definitely like a teenager, I think, like in my late teens.
Surely not.
Like, I don't watch Bridget Jones regularly. I'm sorry.
You haven't watched it in the past 5 years. It's on like every Christmas.
I don't really watch, like, I mean, maybe, I don't think I have, we don't really watch telly at Christmas so much.
No, but
like if we watch a movie, it's like one that we'll choose rather than just whatever's on.
I think of it as a Christmas movie because it starts.
I mean, there's snow, you know, there's Christmas jumpers. But I was just thinking about this and I was like, this really ages us, doesn't it? Because there are like teenagers who have never seen Bridget Jones's Diary. We'll never see Bridget Jones's Diary.
Well, they probably, surely it's like a.
No, because it's like people don't know who like Steps were. Like, you say,
yeah,
like.
I mean, Steps and Bridget Jones. It's like. I don't know, most people have watched When Harry Met Sally, which is like...
I didn't watch that until, like, last year.
Yeah, but you are not a good benchmark.
No, but you are not a good benchmark either, because you watch all of the old weird films.
Like, the old and weird ones.
Well, no, as in, like, you for some reason had, like, great knowledge of, like, 80s music and Dirty Dancing and stuff because you're an Aquarius and you can't like things that are current, so you're just like,
no, well, I do like, I mean, not to sound old, but even Richard said this, is like, they don't make good romantic films anymore, like they're just cringy when you watch them.
They're cringy before.
I don't,
it's, I, you're just an Aquarius, and you need to admit it.
The acting is worse now. Like, the content was bad before, but the acting was good. Like, I'm not saying this is, like, the stand-up of romance, the blueprint, because Christ on a bike. When you take notes on it, you really... Nothing
so much happens.
You. They say the same offensive comments 3 times.
At least 3 times. I think it might have been...
I wrote down every time they said it. And,
yeah, no, I really, like, it really aged this movie because I remember, like, watching it and it was kind of quite current, like, when I was a kid. I mean, it was still, when was it made? 2001. Yeah, so we were 5.
If you watched it for, like, the first time when you were 10, it would have been quite a newish film.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I mean, there's layers of it that as you, like, when you're a child, you don't get it. I mean, obviously. And then I watched it as an adult and I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're referring to. But also, oh, that's very inappropriate. That's really cringy. Like, I think as a child, you see Bridget Jones and you just think, oh, she's just a bit of a funny lady. She's just a little bit awkward. As an adult, you look at Bridget Jones and you're like, you are actually horrendously embarrassing.
Yeah, she is also, but also it's almost like, so like, I think we need to talk about this because it's like a big thing about Bridget Jones, and I know we're starting early, but the weight thing.
Yes, I mean, we're going to get into that because I think that's the very basis of kind of
what
so,
the film is about, like her supposedly being overweight and that being a character flaw.
So let's just introduce Bridget Jones because we're already talking about Bridget Jones, like everyone knows who she is, and they might not. I mean. Mm. There might be 17-year-olds out there and they've never seen Bridget Jones. And if you are one of those people, I respect you. I never watched Dirty Dancing. Anyway, so...
Excellent. I mean, watch it. Even, like, these things don't age well, but I think it's still...
I did like Ghost, though. I watched Ghost, like, last year, and I did enjoy it.
I mean, I don't think Patrick Swayze is the one that carries Ghost.
No, it's clearly Whoopi Goldberg. She is the star of that movie. But anyway. So, Bridget Jones's Diary is about a woman called Bridget Jones, surprisingly enough. She's 32, and she starts the thing by being like, on my 32nd year of being single. I'm like, dang, Bridget. I mean, no shame, but I'm just like, not even like a little, you know, funny.
I didn't even take
childhood romance. I mean, like, yeah, no shame. I think it's totally fine if you've been single for ages, but I just think it's quite rare, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, considering.
Especially considering, yeah, she's very like up for that kind of
thing. Yeah, her lifestyle would indicate that it would be very easy for her to be in a relationship. It's not like she has any kind of barriers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, no, she's like a perfectly attractive person who's outgoing. Yeah, I mean, Amanda Price, who is almost the Austin equivalent, if we're talking about modern Austin adaptations, Amanda Price is like Bridget Jones level of weird. But she had a boyfriend that proposed to her. Weird people get proposed to.
Yeah. Although I have to say, she's quite... I kind of didn't realise how middle class everyone is in this film.
Yeah, they are very middle class. I mean, it starts with a turkey curry buffet. Bridget Jones' mum has a yearly turkey curry buffet. She has been, well, she obviously has to go to it. And she gets there. She's like talking about how tragic her life is because she's 32 and she's single. And her mum gives her this hideous Christmas waistcoat to wear.
It's like an ensemble thing. It's got matching skirt.
Yeah.
Now her mum is like, really, if we're going to like go for equivalencies with Pride and Prejudice, her mum is like very Mrs. Bennet-esque.
Yeah, although kind of less aggressive. Yeah, so anyway, her mum's a bit of a like, she's slightly kind of shy and sort of retiring. Maybe not retiring, but she's like, she's not as assertive as Mrs. Bennet.
No, she's not as assertive, but she is with Bridget.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, Bridget is clearly the Lizzie Bennet of this story. Her mum is Mrs. Bennet. Bridget doesn't have any siblings, as far as we know. And then she's walking in, her mum says, oh, Mark Darcy's coming today. And Bridget's like, oh, my mum's always trying to set me up with various weird men. Every year. Mark Darcy, obviously Mr. Darcy, is a barrister. And then we're not going to say the racist joke that her mum says, which isn't a joke in her mum's opinion, I guess. She's just being straight-faced about it. But this is a racist joke about Japanese people.
Mark's ex-wife left him and she puts it down to her race.
Essentially.
That's what it is, basically. She puts it down to her race. And so, like, when that happened, I was like, yikes.
I didn't even remember that.
No, I did remember
like, that. It's such a prominent... It's said so many times, and I don't even remember it.
I remembered it. I didn't realise it was repeated throughout. I remember it, but I remember it later on. So as soon as I saw it that time, I was like, oh, my God, they say it twice. And then they say it three times.
Fucking hell.
Twice the mum says it and then Bridget says it.
Well, it's immediately, like, it's one after the other with her mum. She makes these offensive remarks. And it's like, the point is that her mum is, like, not doing it to be funny or deliberately offensive, but she just kind of, yeah. It's like, oh, you silly old lady, Mrs. Bennet type, saying these very offensive things. So she goes, you'll never get a boyfriend if you look like you've wandered out of Auschwitz. Crickets.
I miss that.
Yikes. Miss that. On a bike. Yeah, no, she, like, she goes from the Japanese people joke to that immediately. And it's just like a 1-2 punch. You just barely gotten over the racist joke and she's just like, Holocaust joke.
Yeah, so it's all of the, yeah, like, the thing is, this film is almost littered throughout with inappropriate jokes. Like,
yeah, but those are like the first, they're like the headliners of very, like, in 2021, very offensive jokes. Yeah. I think there's some that are like skating around, you know, possibly a little bit risque, but this is like, wow, you really did that.
I was thinking about it, and I was like, when they were filming this and writing this, was nobody like took a step back?
It was 2001, and like you've said, I think you said this in the what's it called? The one with Hilary Duff and Hayley Duff.
Oh, Material Girls.
Material Girls. You were like, it's like there was almost a backlash of misogyny in the early aughts, where it was like we'd gotten some feminism and then they were like, no, actually, we're going to be counterculture and therefore we're going to be really misogynistic. And I think similarly, there was sort of a bit where people realised, like, we can't say offensive things. And then in the early 2000s, everyone was like, in order to be funny, we must say really offensive things.
Yeah, because I literally was like, I don't know, like, obviously, I remember when I was a child, which is around about when this would have come out, people saying offensive things, but I remember knowing it was wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember things being said at my primary school and we knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, those people got in trouble or whatever. But, so that's why I'm like, it seems really bizarre that there was a whole production.
Yeah, but it's this thing, well, when you're a kid, you can't say rude things and get away with it because they're trying to train you to not say rude things as an adult. When you're an adult, it's like, I can, like, I mean, I think that Ricky Gervais and Ricky Gervais's humour is a real, and that kind of ilk, because there was a lot of, like, white male comedians back then that were really popular, where it was like shock humor and they would say stuff that was offensive and like people loved it.
Similarly to, I think, because obviously we talked about it last week, Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, and like Jeremy Clarkson was like the king of Tilly in the early aughts, right? So I don't know when Top Gear was, but I remember watching it as a kid and being like, oh, yeah, I love Jeremy, he's so funny, he's so like irreverent. I didn't use that word as a child, but you know what I mean.
Imagine you describing Jeremy Clarkson as irreverent.
I love Jeremy Clarkson. He's so irreverent.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, I get what you mean. I just was like, there were like jokes that go through this and you're like, shh. Like, obviously, there's that whole ongoing weight saga, which just...
Yeah.
The thing is, I watched a documentary about how she created this character, which has really influenced my watching of this.
Because I've not seen it.
It's really, really good. Because she kind of also wrote an essay for this book called Girls Can't Wear Pink or something. It was like a bunch of like feminist essays that people wrote. And she wrote one as Bridget Jones. And she was kind of like, I can't believe I put up with all that shit. And it was kind of like, I think somebody...
The author or...
Oh, no, like, as in, she was talking as if she was Bridget.
But is this the author or Renee Zellweger?
No, the author. Renee didn't do it, no. So it was like a kind of... Because I think people had used Bridget as an example of like, Me Too has gone too far, just watch Bridget Jones, see how it is. And then she kind of wrote this essay and was like, no, that was written at a time when you didn't realise you didn't have to put up with it.
Yeah.
And it was like, which I thought was like quite interesting because, yeah, it's aged badly, but if you see it from the writer's perspective, who was a woman in journalism at that time, yeah, she just didn't think anything different of how...
Also, the only reason that she let... And well, that's kind of spoilers, but anyway. The only reason she lets Daniel, like, sexually harass her is because it's not sexual harassment. She fancies him. But then if you think about Mr. Tits Pervert, she doesn't like him. And she talks about him being a tits pervert.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not, like, just accepting any kind of ogling. She's like, Daniel's dishy and I fancy him, so obviously I want him to make comments about my tits.
Yeah, and I realise Mr. Tits Pervert is Mr. Collins.
Is he? What?
I think so. He's Mr. Collins, isn't he? He's like the gross guy.
Oh, right. I thought you meant like the actor was Mr. Collins, but yes, that makes sense.
You really missed him.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, and we meet creepy Uncle Jeffrey, who's just another creepy man in this creepy saga.
Yeah, and like you say, she kind of points out the creepy men.
Yeah, so he always touches her on the arse, apparently. He's not actually her uncle. He's just a random man that is creepy and is friends with her parents. And then she sees Mark Darcy across the room because she's been like, oh, it's going to be a horrible, terrible, fluffy-haired man.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees him and he's turning around. She's like, ding dong.
Does she say that?
Because I've got it on my notes. And then her mum like takes her over and introduces them and asks if Mark fancies a gherkin. She's apparently like thinks that gherkins are the height of sophistication. And then she's like, this is Mark Darcy, he used to run around his garden naked. And then,
we'll talk about it later. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are kind of supposed to be attractive in this, and I'm just like,
Well, I mean, I think the point is it's slightly embarrassing, but it is still very inappropriate, and no one would make that joke.
Yeah, like, it's a comment later on, much later on, but in reference to that story, I did just write Bridget is really weird. Like, she is.
She's quite extremely weird. They leave Bridget with Mark and she's so cringe. She's like, he's like, how are you or something? And she's like, oh, I'm a bit hungover, like while smoking inside, which is such a weird thing to see in this day and age. Because you just forget that that's a thing. She's like, oh yeah, I had another party last night, so I'm a bit hungover. New Year's resolution, stop drinking. Oh, and stop smoking. Ha ha ha. And stop talking utter bullshit to strangers or something. And then she like touches him on the chest, which is weird.
Yeah, she gets like a weird, almost like desperate air about her.
She's just, yeah, like you're just like, she's absolutely digging herself a hole. And he's just like,
she also like really judges his Christmas jumper in like such a,
she's wearing a Christmas waistcoat.
Yeah, and she's just like, ugh. And I'm like, it's Christmas, and he's wearing a novelty jumper. Like, this is not an.
It's not as bad as her one either.
Yeah, like, also, it's like, how many people do you bump into in novelty jumpers around Christmas time? Like, it's not an unusual outfit choice.
I kind of would find it attractive if someone was wearing a novelty Christmas jumper. They don't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah. But, so yeah, they have this exchange. It's really awkward. And then they part ways. And then she overhears him.
He's talking to, who is he talking to? Is it his mum?
Una. I think it's Una he's talking to.
I think she's like, do you want to, like, see her again? And he's like, I don't want to hang out with a verbally incontinent spinster who smokes like a chimney, drinks like a fish, and dresses like her mother.
And then, and I'm like, Bridget just hears it. I mean, it's Bridget.
And she's just like, tasty. Like, she's serving herself some food behind. And you're like, oh, Jesus.
And then I was like, this is where they differ, because Lizzie would have got, been like, well, fuck him then.
Yeah.
But she's just like, all by myself. Yeah, so basically, her reaction to this is, I'm going to die alone. That's what she, and she's like, in her pyjamas,
in glass of wine, yeah, watching Fraser. Fraser.
Vodka, pure vodka she's drinking.
Is it?
Yeah, she's pouring herself pure vodka.
She's just looking really sad for a bit, and then it starts, like, the music starts kind of coming in, and she has a little lumps of, she does, like, a little guitar plucking when the, like, intro comes in.
I think it's one of the best pieces.
Yeah, it's iconic. It's truly iconic.
Yeah, like, comedy acting.
Yeah.
Because she just does a performance in her pyjamas, like as a drunk single.
And it's very, like, it's very realistic to just a single woman.
Or
a woman that isn't single, but.
Yeah, just like, yeah, it's very, yeah, it's just very realistic to what people might do on their own.
Yeah.
After a shitty time as well.
I was also looking at her flat. And it's in, like, quite central London, I believe. How is she affording that fucking flat?
I know. This is discussed so often that exterior shops are above a pub, which is referenced quite a lot. And you can actually live in that flat above that pub. And it costs a fucking fortune. Obviously.
Yeah, man. Like, she has, like, five rooms in that flat.
Yeah, she's got just like that beautiful bay window on the stairs with the stained glass windows. And yeah, she's completely on her own in this flat because she worked as
and she works as like I'm not sure.
Assistant, I think.
Yeah, she's an assistant at a publishing house.
She's not an assistant to anyone, but she's like she's just a publishing assistant.
So she does admin and stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe, the thing is, though, we say it's unrealistic, but I do think in the 90s it perhaps wasn't.
I saw a picture today of, like, an old shopping list from the 80s, and everything was, like, 20p, like, literally everything.
Yeah, so I think the 90s was when the houses in London started to rise. So it's, like, that was the last time normal people could afford houses in London.
I honestly, like, just the fact that we're born in this era when there used to be free university and you could buy a Freddo for, like, 2p.
And you can literally, like, I think I was listening to a podcast with Alan Davies and he bought a flat, I think, in Finchley in 1995 and it cost him $65,000.
Fucking hell. And it's just like, and the thing is, we got just a little taste of it, a little taste, because I used to buy Freddos for 10p, not 10p, like, well, it was, they were like 1p, I swear, at one point. And then, like, you could buy penny sweets and shit, and now...
Really, I think, like, the last 30 years where things have got out of control. It's, like, very recent.
Yeah, man. You know what I mean? Are we ever going to get the, you know, the deflation of that at any point? Because it's supposed to happen.
It'll crash and burn first. It'll be like a brutal
period. Well, we already had the credit crunch.
Yeah, but no, I think like you say, society's got to collapse in on itself.
I mean, has it not already?
It's what do they call, like, the slow decline of late capitalism or something? It's like slowly crumbling while we're trying to, like...
I want to say it's the Anthropocene, but I'm not sure what that means.
We're plasterboarding it up at the moment. Like, people have not accepted it all needs to come down yet.
It's an unofficial unit of geologic time used to describe the most recent period in Earth's history when human activity has started to have a significant impact on planets, climate, and ecosystems. Yep, there you go.
Look at you. Anyway.
I did an art history A-level.
I'm going to share this with facts. About this, because I found that documentary so interesting.
Good, I'm up for it.
This that scene where she's got the vodka, she's in her pajamas, was actually
do 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 do
the middle of the film.
Oh, by myself.
It was supposed to be after.
Do wanna be by myself anymore.
But they thought it had more impact at the beginning, and they were
right. Yeah, it does. They were right. But and then she's had this like sad dance, and then she's like, this is when I decided that I am gonna, like, she starts a diary and she's like, no more, or like she's gonna cut down on alcohol, on smoking, and she's gonna lose weight. And so she starts. She's like, alcohol 50 units. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and then
how much is 50? That's like 3 bottles of wine.
It's maybe. I mean, like, a glass of wine is about 5, and you probably get 3 in a glass of wine. Like, a large glass of wine is probably 5, and you get 3 out of a bottle, really.
Hmm.
So, yeah, the maths.
How many units is a bottle of wine? 10 units. So that's 5 bottles of wine.
And then, is it a weekly? I think it is a weekly thing, which isn't actually, I don't know. I could see a single woman who goes out a lot doing 5 bottles of wine a week in metropolitan London.
Especially, I guess.
Especially in the 90s when people used to have boozy lunches and stuff.
Hmm.
And then she, how many cigarettes?
I don't remember how, I think it was like 42 or something.
And then the weight.
Yeah, so this is something that, like, is peppered throughout the movie. She lists how many cigarettes she's had, how many units of alcohol, and then what her weight is. And I honestly didn't pay attention because I didn't want to know. But yeah, so she sort of has that as a measuring stick.
Out her BMI, not that BMI is a good way of working anything out, because it's outdated.
She looks about a size 14.
She's completely what a BMI would consider a healthy weight. I mean, like, obviously, like, this is when we get into the weird politics of, like, BMI being a terrible barometer for anything like that. But it's just, like, not even in the, like, fucked up medical world is she considered.
No, I mean, it's just, and that's like, if you remember the early aughts, it was all about being really, really, really skinny.
Yeah, like, she's just a completely normal woman.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that does show you, I mean, like, because that was the culture of the early aughts, was, like, going on about how much she weighed.
Living off cigarettes and drugs, probably.
Like, if you think about, like, Paris Hilton and Kate Moss, like, as the kind of fashion icons.
Yeah, like, this was, like, the rise of Kate Moss as well, if we were going by a UK reference.
Yeah.
And that, like, heroin chic look.
And then she goes on, like, she's like, I'm no longer going to have, like, relationships with alcoholics, peeping toms or megalomaniacs. But she just said she's been 32 years single.
Yeah, I think she's not counting, like, anything that wasn't serious,
I guess.
So she wouldn't count what she has with Daniel. Do you know what I mean?
Although she says that he's her boyfriend at one point.
Although that's clearly not been discussed with Daniel.
Yeah.
So yes, enter Daniel actually at this point. So she goes into work and she's like, she's like, definitely won't have an inappropriate relationship with incredibly sexy boss.
It's a young, well, a youngish, like, 20s Hugh Grant.
Another key fact about this, which has put me off Hugh Grant a little bit.
Don't do it to me.
Said in this documentary, she was like, he didn't have to do a lot of acting for that role. And then he said in this documentary as well, this character is probably most like me in real life.
Bruh!
I was like, why would you admit that? Like, he's not a nice character. I mean, I think it's more the womanizing aspect of it rather than...
Yeah.
All the other stuff, although the womanizing aspect is a huge part of it. But yeah, I mean, I think Hugh Grant was a womanizer in his day.
Yeah.
Also, I find it so weird because obviously Renee Zellweger is American and actually, like, from the, like, Texas.
Yeah.
So she has this really Southern American accent. And then I'm like, for years I didn't notice. And I was really paying attention to her English accent, and, like, yes, it's a bit of a stereotype, but I was like, it's so middle class, you don't notice it.
Yeah, like, you could hear someone, it's not the worst accent. Like, I've heard much worse English accents also, by American. Yeah,
like, I definitely think I could meet someone who sounds like that. Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, like, accents are, like, I was listening to my dad wrote a porno, hilarious podcast, and they had, like, an accent coach on, because one of the guys does loads of different accents and some of them are quite bad. And she was like, but here's the thing, the perfect accent doesn't exist because everyone has their own, like, amalgamation of, you know, influences and experiences. So it's like,
yeah,
really, like, there are people, I mean, if you think about Gillian Anderson, she has a very weird, like, kind of American English.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
I mean, some of them you listen to it and you're like, well, this is clearly a person doing a different accent. But I think it's all right. You heard it here first, folks. She's like, oh, but I don't think he's going to feel the same way about me because of a particular memory of a Christmas party. And then it's her doing karaoke drunkenly on a table with some, like, dealy boppers on her head. Well, first we get introduced to Mr. Tits Pervert. He was just a dude at her work who always stares at her tits. His name is Mr. Fitzherbert, but he's called Mr. Tips Pervert to her. There's also a lady called Perpetua who wears an Alice band. It's funny how the trends come round because that's supposed to make her really frumpy. But recently the Alice band, especially the big kind of poofy Alice band, has come back.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we get Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter.
Yeah, he calls her at work, and I found
this is her friend.
Really interesting, because I can't remember the exact job title she said, but she basically was like a stockbroker at the bank, Jude, which I never really noticed before. But basically, Bridget introduces her via her job, which is incredibly high up in the bank.
Mm.
And then she's like, absolutely useless with men. And it's just Jude crying in the toilet. I was like, this is like a really interesting... All the women...
I don't think I noticed this, what her job was.
Yeah, because she says, oh, Jude is a so-and-so... Like, she's high up in the bank. So she's kind of saying she's got this high up job in the bank. And then I was kind of like, all of the women, apart from Bridget's mum, really, but all of the women, her, like, contemporaries, are, like, career women.
Mm.
I just thought that was... But, like, it's that trope of, like, career... You can't be a career... Like, it's almost like it's trying to combat you can't be a career woman and have a love life.
Yeah, well, because then there's this whole thing... This question later about all the single women in their 30s that seems to be some kind of like epidemic in England at that time, and people sort of questioning why.
Yeah, well, I also wrote here maybe Jude is Mary, because I think they used her friends in a similar way that the Bennett sisters are used.
Yeah.
I don't think there's, like, light-for-light characters, because I don't think she thought that deeply into it. I think she used it as a plot device, and that was all.
Yeah.
But I just thought if we were going to... I just think Jude is quite like Mary in the sense that they're, like, good friends, but she's very weird and a bit intense.
Yeah. I think I could see her playing Mary in another
place. Yeah, and then I wrote Shazza is maybe Charlotte. So Shazza is a very sweary journalist friend.
Yeah.
Played by Sally Phillips.
Yeah.
And I most identify with Shazza in this film. I was like, I am that friend who swears too much, says things too bluntly when people are upset. And, like, it's just a bit like...
Yeah, and then you've got, I've forgotten his name.
Tom. And do you know Reverend Richard Coles?
Famous vicar.
Who is like a public figure because he was in a band.
Right.
The Communards. He was in the Communards. And then he had a number one hit single in the 80s. Called Don't Leave Me This Way, and then he's a gay man, and then he became a vicar later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is based off Reverend Richard Coles, which I just absolutely love it. So like they were good friends, and like, yeah, Tom is, he's like a, he had one hit wonder in the 80s, and as she puts it, realized that was enough to get him laid throughout the entire 90s.
Yeah. And, so he's like kind of the one token gay man in the friendship group.
Yeah, because, yeah, she says something later on, and I'm not sure if she's saying it. Like, she is saying it endearingly, but I'm like, I don't know if she's allowed.
Yeah, she says a slur. But anyway, so Mona Myrtle is on the phone to Bridget while she's in the office.
Yeah, I kind of love her toxic friends, though.
Yeah, they're all right.
They're toxic, obviously, but, like...
Yeah.
They're all as toxic as each other, so it works.
They're not pretending to be anything else.
And then this is what I found interesting. So she goes back to work and she gets this like MSN instant message.
Yeah.
From Daniel Cleaver, and it's like very important information. And he basically says like...
Serious problem.
And he's like, we've got a serious problem with the length of your skirt. And he goes on
he
and
says,
on. He says,
you seem to have forgotten your skirt. Is skirt off sick?
This is the thing, and she instantly thinks he's flirting, and it feels like something a secondary school teacher would say to someone who had rolled up their skirt, doesn't it? Be like, yeah. Oh, is your, like, I don't know why I went West Country there, oh, but she's literally like, oh, flirty, and I'm like, I understand that obviously he is being flirty in this scenario, but I was just like, that is not flirty to me. That is like him telling you off for the length of your skirt.
Which... Yeah. I guess it's like, there's vibes in there. And I guess he's like a known womanizer, so.
Yeah, so anyway, she sends a witty message back and they start flirting and her outfits get more and more inappropriate for the workplace. I'm not gonna lie, I think women can wear whatever they want, yeah, but I also think when you're in office you're not gonna wear a see-through jumper.
No.
Well, that's the thing. And then at one point she walks in and she's wearing the see-through jumper, so you can literally see her bra. And then she's wearing this skirt that is incredibly short. And then she walks in like a duck as well. You know when they do that sequence of her walking into the office? Like, why are her feet pointing out like that when she... I just was like, is this a
it's a very tight skirt? I don't know.
Maybe, but it was very weird. And then at this point, I was like, I love the music in this. It really makes me nostalgic.
I was thinking about this because the soundtrack to this movie is iconic to the early aughts.
It really is. Like, if a song from Bridget Jones's Diary comes on the radio, I'm like, this is from Bridget.
I can't remember the words. I ever loved by you,
Valerie?
No, Out of Reach.
Oh, is it
Valerie? That's a different Valerie. Song, my friend.
Also,
you don't often get to listen to Bethany sing on this podcast, but there you go.
It's because
you're welcome.
I save the listeners.
come on, Bethany, don't put yourself down.
What I found interesting is, because the way I remember this is obviously like Daniel, also his name is Daniel Cleaver, which is so like emotive, it's so like gross. Anyway.
Yeah, Cleaver just sounds like weird.
Yeah, like meat cleaver. Oh, anyway. She's got the upper hand at this point. It's weird. Like, obviously he's her boss, so she doesn't really have the upper hand. But she's completely rebuffing his advances. Yeah, like, he's consistent. At first I was like, Bridget is such an idiot for falling for Daniel Cleaver. But the way he goes about it is he really does pursue her.
Yeah, I know that I would do the same thing. I would know deep down that he's a bastard, but then I would fall for it. I fall for it every time.
And then they have the launch of Kafka's Motorcycle. This book launch that they're doing.
Kafka's Motorcycle. I don't even know what it's about. I think the point is that no one knows what it's about.
It's supposed to be really shit. And then she has to introduce her boss. Well, first of all, so yeah, she embarrasses herself in front of Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
And then she bumps into Mark Darcy and... what's her name? Petunia? Not Petunia.
Perpetua.
Perpetua's there, and she kind of imagines introducing them, and then she's like, oh, Mark, I used to play naked in the paddling pool with Mark and his, and then she repeats the offensive comment that her mum said earlier.
But then, like, Perpetua is actually the MVP later on.
Yeah, like... I've met people who like Perpetua where they're like kind of annoying, but they're actually like solid people. Like they get on your tits, but they're all...
I didn't realise that Salman Rushdie is actually played by Salman Rushdie here.
I just assumed that it was Salman Rushdie. I was like, that would be a bold move for them to get someone to play Salman Rushdie.
Just a weird, like, cameo.
Yeah, it is a bit, but... Again, I'm telling you, Helen Fielding had connections.
Natasha turns up.
Oh, yeah, Mark Darcy says, I used to... Bridget.
Well, because Natasha is his colleague, and she turns up and
Caroline Bingley.
That's the Caroline Bingley of this situation. And she's, like, quite an attractive woman, and she... And Bridget's like, who's this? And then Mark introduces her, and he's like, this is Natasha, she's my law partner or whatever. And he's like, this is Bridget, she used to play naked in my paddling pool. And it's like, ooh.
Yeah, and this is the thing, because Bridget...
This is the first minute where you see Mr. Darcy kind of come out of his shell a little bit, where you're like, ooh.
Yeah, like, he said that as a joke, like clearly meant as like a gentle joke.
Yeah.
And then she's like, got a face like thunder over it. And then Natasha's like, how odd. And I'm just like, this has become a thing that it really didn't need to become a thing. And yes, that was slightly inappropriate to mention at a work do, but like, I think it's just classic, like, Mr. Darcy can't socialise vibes.
Well, yeah, and also because in the same way that Lizzie hates Mr. Darcy, like, whatever he does, she's going to hate it. But also, with Bridget, she's heard him describe her as a verbally incontinent spinster.
So she kind of hates him already, but I think she just was like, because her face drops at the comment, so she's not. Yeah. But anyway, then she has to introduce her boss, who's going to introduce Kafka, writer, not actual Kafka.
Not Kafka. And, just imagine that cameo. It
would have been great.
In the grave.
And then, as she's drunk by this point, she's really like...
She's lost it.
The greatest author of our time, which is the tagline for the book.
Well, the microphone doesn't work, so she just gets the room's attention by going, "Oi!"
Which is honestly something I would have done. I'd be like, "Excuse me! It's time!" And then, and then she's like, "Oh, here's Kafka, the greatest
book of our time."
And she's like, "Except for yours, Mr. Rushdie."
And yours, Mr. Someone Else. And yours. It's one of the top 30 books of our time. At least.
And then she's like, "Here's Mr." And she's like, "Not tits pervert, not tits not pervert.
Don't say but tits pervert."
And because she's literally doing that, it takes her so long to say Fitzherbert.
And every, like, Mr. Darcy is just like, "What the fuck is going on?"
And she's like, and that's his name.
And then Daniel's just like, laughing to himself.
That's the...
This is like her appeal, I think, is just the absolute hilariousness of watching her just...
Yeah, like someone with absolutely no inhibitions. It's quite, like, charming in a way.
Yeah.
One thing, so then Daniel kind of comforts her and is like, "Let's get out of here. Like, you have had an absolute mare of a night. Let's get out of here." And then I really like this, when he's talking about, "So how do you know Arcy Darcy?"
Well, it's the immediate thing of like when Wickham starts talking to her and immediately is like, "So what about, do you know Mr. Darcy?" Like, yeah, he just wants to talk about it all the time.
I just thought Arcy Darcy was like such a Hugh Grant line. Do you know, it's like those things that you like when you're a child and then you watch it again and you're like, it's offensive, but it's too late.
Yeah.
It's in your heart. You can't let it out again. And this is what this film is. Like, I know it's bad. I can view it as an adult and be like, objectively, this is horrific. But yeah. I've watched it so many times and it has such comforting memories for me.
Yeah. It's also hilarious. Like, I was laughing the whole way through.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It's like this smattering of offensiveness. And obviously it comes from a place of privilege. Kind of, I'm not the target of any of it.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be a lot easier for me to watch it than other people.
Yeah.
But it smatters it throughout. It kind of jolts you out of it almost because you are like pissing yourself. Like there's the misogyny in it, but Bridget is in on the joke.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, like Bridget is an incredibly privileged person. I mean, she has a gorgeous flat in the middle of London. She's got two parents who have very supportive of her, and you know, she's got two very handsome men, but also she's kind of seen as this rather ridiculous, she has very little power at the beginning of the story because she sees her, she has such low self-esteem, and she's like, you know, I think, and she's like, "I'm a spinster, no one likes me, you know, I've got this really tragic existence," and then you kind of see her start to become more. Like, she feels like she has more power in the situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. So she goes on this date with Daniel, and he wines and dines her, basically, doesn't he? He, like, proper puts the, as they say on Love Island, sticks it on her.
He's like, how do you know Darcy? And she's like, "I used to play naked in his paddling pool." And he's like, "I bet you did, you dirty bitch."
Oh my God, she was a child. Like, oh God, he says so many comments like that, and I'm like, oh my God, I hate it, but also I really fucking hate that I would probably laugh at that on a date.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No. It would shock you, and obviously you know it's supposed
to. I think I wouldn't actually, because it would just be like.
I think that would make me laugh, just because, like, you can tell Daniel Cleaver is not a paedophile.
Yeah, I mean, if it was Hugh Grant as Daniel Cleaver, I probably would laugh. not gonna lie. He's just generally kind of low-key, is this creepy or is this...
Yeah, like... I did, I mean, I say this, I'm, like, defending him. At this moment, I wrote, Daniel is grim.
Yeah, I wrote, he's such a creeper at this moment.
Yeah, he is, like, he is, yeah. The thing is, it's making me laugh now because it's so horrific. It's so bad.
Like, you can pull it apart in post, but really, in the moment, you're like, this is horrible.
I think I would have laughed out of shock.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of thing that, I mean, and that's what I mean about the shock comedy thing at the time. It's like, this is kind of low key for the kind of jokes that people thought were really funny.
And that's the thing, though. I think there's different kinds of shock comedy, because I would say that's actually shock comedy. But the other stuff, like what her mum said, there was no shock in me. I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, I was just like, this was unnecessary.
No, like, oh my god. Like, what have you done?
This is sinking my stomach, like, oh no.
Anyway, so she's trying to be like, okay, I'm gonna get a taxi home, and he's like, we won't have any funny business, just does he say, like, my
full room? Sex.
Full on sex, that's what he says. He's like, no funny business, just full on sex. I was like, I fucking hate Daniel Cleaver, but he's good at what he does.
I know, this is the thing, because he could get away with it because he's played by Hugh Grant, but if that wasn't, like, a less attractive man,
I truly think the casting, you would hate Daniel Cleaver if it was anyone else.
Yeah,
like, I really don't know who else could play that. And I think that's part of, you know, when they're like, oh, it's very like Hugh Grant's personality, maybe that's why it comes off so well. Because it's something he would have said. Like, I think the dirty bitch comment was his own comment. Do you know, like, there's something he says throughout this, and I'm like, I think that's Hugh Grant's own. I think that's just Hugh Grant.
That's improv. Daniel tells her his fake-ass sub story about how he's... Because he says, how do you know Darcy? And she explains, and she's like, how do you know him? And he's like, oh, he's my best man at my wedding.
No, he says, I was best man at his wedding.
Oh, his wedding, that's right. Okay, yes. Yeah, so then he's like, oh, but then I had the...
He made the mistake of introducing him to his fiance, basically implying.
Yeah, and he's like, essentially implying that, yeah, Darcy slept with her, and he has this, like, sad look on his face, and he's kind of blinking. And Bridget's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then he's like, no, let's not blame Brian on, like, so manipulative.
Yeah, it's such a bold move as well, though. That's what I don't get. I'm like, you are...
This is George Wickham move.
Yeah, it is.
By the way, if we haven't mentioned, Daniel Cleaver is George Wickham.
Like, it's very, like, yeah, it's a very Wickham move. That's literally what Wickham does.
That's immediately. He has this sob story and he has to tell it. And I think also because he has this sense of he wants to be liked. And he wants Bridget to like him. So he's just like... Regardless of whether we're going to get together or they're going to get together, he has to have this narrative that he controls. I mean, that's the thing about Wickham, is he has to control his own narrative.
Anyway, so he basically convinces her to go back to his or her flat. I can't remember where they are.
Her flat.
And he's like, these are very silly little boots, Jones. Oh, it's awful.
When he keeps calling her Jones, it's very weird.
And then he lifts up her skirt.
And he's like, these are very silly little... What are these?
I think he's like, fuck me, they're massive. And then he's like, hello, mummy.
Oh, God. That line has, like, remained in my mind for most of my life as just being horrific.
It's so horrible.
Hello, mummy.
Yeah, so anyway, they end up having sexy times.
Sexy times.
And then she basically, her mum's leaving her dad. And I kind of understood it. She basically was like, I've got nothing of my own.
Yeah, well, they've got, like, he just doesn't pay very much attention to her. They've got no sex life. She's like, I'm like Jermaine Greer. And I'm like, sorry?
Jermaine Greer.
Oh, yeah.
Like Jermaine.
The only thing, I mean, I know Jermaine Greer is a famous feminist, and also I think recently... outed herself as a transphobe.
Yeah.
But I don't know what she's referring to with Jermaine Greer. Maybe that she's...
She said the no sex life bit.
Oh, right, okay. So then she says, well, I've met this guy called Julian, and he runs, like, TV shopping. he's very orange, and she's like, I've been talent spotted. He wants me to come and show the products on his show, basically be his like glamorous assistant.
Anyway, so they've got that Tarts and Vickers party, and they've decided to kind of coincide it with like a romantic, sexy weekend. Well, more of a sexy weekend.
A mini break, as she described it.
Yeah, and then they turn up at the hotel where there's apparently a wedding going on. So there's only four of them are not part of it. And guess who the other two are?
It's what a surprise.
Mark Darcy and Natasha. I really hate Natasha. Like, I know we're supposed to hate Natasha, and I kind of feel like I'm playing into this, like, internal...
Yeah, we don't really know. It's a bit like Vivian in Legally Blonde, where it's, like, this slightly prudish-looking, like, straight-laced-looking girlfriend. It's like, awkward, and there's sort of this tension between... Daniel immediately goes upstairs, and he's like, I'll see you later. And there's, like, clearly there's still bad blood between... Daniel and Mark, and then they go there the next day. They're like out in rowing boats on the lake, and like earlier Daniel had said he's like, oh yeah, it's fine as long as we don't read poetry to each other or something. And then they're like on the boats, and Natasha's reading Keats to Mark, and then Daniel like starts singing along this.
They're hammered as well.
He's singing this limerick.
And then he's like trying to get from one boat to the other. And he's like, I'm king of the world. And then
he falls in the lake.
Promptly falls in. And like Mark Darcy's kind of looking over. A bit longingly.
He's like, oh, I kind of wish I was there instead of being read Keats by Natasha.
And then we're back in the hotel room. They've just had a sexy times again.
Yeah, she just immediately turns to him after this session. And she's like, do you love me? And he's like, shut up or I'll do it again. And she's like, do you love me? I'm like, Bridget, you're digging yourself a hole. Like, what is... this is obviously not going to go well for you.
So they're getting ready. It's the next morning. Daniel basically says, oh, loads of shit has happened and I now can't go to the Tarts and Vickers party.
How convenient after she just asked you if you love her.
Yeah, he's basically running away. He's just like, I've got loads of work. And then she's just like, I don't see why you have to go. And then he...
Well, I think, like, well, the thing is, right, I think initially when I watched this, I was like, no, she's being ridiculous because...
I don't think she's being ridiculous.
And I was like, oh, she's being really needy. I mean, the thing where she's like, do you love me, right? Yeah, and then, but then I also think... that as women, we kind of gaslighted into this idea that, like, if we are wanting emotional intimacy, that we're weird.
Yeah, that's what I was literally, he gaslights her in this moment.
Yeah, because...
he's like, I don't really see what's so important that you need to go now.
And can you not just come to the party and, like, leave then?
Yeah, like, just you could make an appearance. And it's like a Sunday as well, so it is like weird that this has happened. And then he's like, well, of course you wouldn't. And he kind of like raises his voice a little bit and he's like, you don't know.
He like hits the bedstead.
And then she's like, oh, sorry. And then he's instantly like, I was an ass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agree.
You were. Like, you just, he kind of overreacted to kind of just stop her asking questions.
Yeah, which is just a classic male move.
And then so she gets up, dressed up as a Playboy bunny.
To go to the Tarts and Vickers party.
So she turns up, and the fancy dress has been cancelled. So she turns up, and nobody else is dressed. She's like full Playboy, like she's gone.
She's got a little tail, she's got the big ears, she's in like a kind of bodysuit. And her mum's like, your dad's been acting really weirdly. He's been trying, I think he was actually trying to flirt with Penny. She's only just had her ovaries done. And Penny's just looking really nervous. Like,
and she's just like, he was really frightening for her.
I'm tender. Darcy is there. And then she starts talking about, she's like, oh, it's a shame you couldn't bring Daniel. And, Una's like, oh, I hope he's good enough for you. And Darcy's like, no, I can definitely say that he isn't.
He's so attractive in this, isn't he, Colin Firth? I'm like, he's so sexy in it.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had a massive thing for Colin Firth.
I do really have. I have a massive thing for Mark Darcy. That's, I find Mark Darcy more attractive than Colin Firth, Mr. Darcy.
I think I find Colin Firth, Mr. Darcy more attractive.
I think he was like a first crush thing or something. I'm like, oh.
But yes, so he's clearly like mad about that.
She then decides she wants comfort and emotional support, so of course she's a fucking idiot and goes to Daniel's house for that.
Yeah.
And then this is where I'm like, he is so bold. The audacity of
the men. Audacity.
He's just like, yeah, hi Bridget, come up. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna spoil it a little bit. I'm gonna jump ahead slightly. There's a naked woman in his bathroom, okay? This is why we need context for this. He's like, yeah, Bridget, come up. I'm like, you're fucking inviting her into the house.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, listen, you go home, get dressed, and I'll come see you, all right? And then she's like, wait a second, is there someone here? Because she hears like a movement. And he's like, no. And she like goes into his, she like forced her way into his bedroom, and then more gaslighting. There's no one in the bedroom. And she's like, sorry, I'm going insane. And he's like, don't even worry about it, I feel really bad. And then she's like about to leave, and then she's like, wait a second. And she goes back, and
women's shoes at the door.
Yeah. And she goes into the bathroom, and then there's just this naked woman sitting with, why is he in front of her? Some kind of big...
She's got, like, a ledger, because she is actually, like, a business colleague from America.
Yeah.
Lara. Yeah, she's just like, I thought you said she was skinny.
Yeah, which is just a bizarre thing. Then Bridget is just sad in the bath. She talks at the beginning about how she's, like, Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. So she's then watching Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction being shot and dying.
And then she kind of just decides to take control of her life, and she's going to leave her job. She goes and she's been applying for a bunch of jobs, and then she's really shit in the interviews.
Well, no, first she goes to Daniel's office, and
Does that happen first? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Got the job first.
No. So she goes to Daniel's office, and like is just trying to carry on like nothing's happened.
She decides to look for a new job. And she goes through, like, all of these, like, terrible interviews. But she does fuck up, like, I'll be honest, most of the time. And then she gets to the last interview for Sit Up Britain. And she's like, he's like, why has she got the job? And she's like, because I fuck my boss and need to...
He's like, you're hired.
He's like, you won't get fired here. in a really creepy way. And then she goes in and she quits. And he's like, don't leave, Bridget. And then that's when Perpetua, is that her name?
Yeah.
He's like, stick it to him, Bridget.
So anyway, she's in Lewisham at a fire station. I used to live in, well, New Cross, but it was very close to Lewisham. Anyway, so she's there doing a very important piece of reporting. I don't even know what it was about.
Yeah, because they're interviewing the chief of the fire station.
Right. And then her boss is like, right, we want you in a short skirt, put more makeup on, get a fireman's hat, I want you sliding down the pole. And she's like, yes, I'm going to do it. And then, like, they go to roll the camera, but there's, like, a bit of a...
communication issue. The producer thinks that they haven't started yet, so he tries to get her to go back up the pole after she's come down a bit. And then they're watching all of this, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And then he's like, no, come down. And she accidentally takes camera man out with her ass. Yeah. And then they're like, we don't even have time to interview him anymore.
So she's like, that's all we have time for? Just after smacking the camera with her.
No, and also that was not her fault, that was the producer's fault, 100%.
Yeah, but I mean it was still her ass. And then she's like, oh god, I've got lunch with so and so and so and so as a married couple, and she's like, oh, and it's just
it's dinner and she's got like couples dinner.
It's like it's a room full of 1 million white couples.
And also, this is what I couldn't work out, is how she hasn't seen Mark since they were kids, and now he's everywhere. And these couples are genuinely insufferable as well.
Well, yeah, there's this one particular dude who clearly is like, I don't know what his deal is. Because he's just like, so Bridget, how's your love life going? Oh, there's just so many...
Rogged up, old girl.
Yeah, time's a ticking. And he, like, pats his pregnant wife's stomach. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And then he's
like, why are there so many 30-year-old women single these days? What's wrong with you?
And then they're like, everyone just turns to Bridget and it's like, yeah, why is that, Bridget? And she's like, I guess one of the reasons is that we've got scales underneath our clothes. And it's just like,
also, why don't they ask Natasha this? She's also single at the table.
Well, yeah, but it's implied that they've got a thing going on.
Anyway, so she's just like, Christ. And then she's leaving. And then Darcy comes down.
And this is like the equivalent of the first proposal.
Yeah, it is. I'll write that down as well. And he's kind of insulting. But he's a lot nicer than Mr. Darcy's in the first proposal.
He's like, there are elements of the ridiculous about you. And you're very bad at public speaking and your mum's quite embarrassing. But I like you very much, just as you are.
Yeah, and she's just like, oh. And then,
well, because Bridget does stand up for herself a bit, so she's like, oh, well, just because I'm all of these terrible things that you said about me, like I smoke like a chimney and whatever. And then he's like, yeah, but I like you anyway. Yeah,
it's really cute. And then Natasha comes out and ruins the moment. She's like, oh, yeah, they just happen to be talking about their legal case over a dinner party.
Yeah, and Bridget has, like, a face journey. Like, it just, her face just, like, processing all of this stuff. And then Natasha's like, hey.
She clicks at him as well. She's like, come on, mug.
Yeah.
Oh, my Christ. Anyway. Yeah, it cuts to her telling her friends, and they're like, what? Just as you are.
What? That's a bit weird.
Don't get it.
Right, okay. Not even a little bit prettier or skinnier or
a better, you know, nose or whatever. Yeah, they're just like, I don't get it. And then she's
so supportive, guys.
She gets this big break at work. She's got to go to this really important case that's having a landmark.
The Agani Heaney case.
Yeah, landmark ruling today, and she's got to get interviews with the people. She turns up, and this is where I was like, oh my God, Bridget, because she's waiting for them to come out.
And then she's like, I need to get a pack of cigarettes.
I literally was like, you're a terrible journalist. Like, absolutely terrible. Anyway, so she's in the corner shop getting the stuff, and then someone goes to order, and she's like, excuse me, and then it turns out it's Darcy. And then her cameraman comes in, and he's like, oh no, we've missed him. We're fucked. I was having a whiz. I missed everything.
I was having a slash, I believe you said. I was having
a slash. And then I was like, this is Darcy's saving Lydia moment.
Yeah, because he is the lawyer, because we're told that he's a human rights lawyer. He is the lawyer for the Agani person, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because there's two people called Agani and Heaney, and one of them is like a guy that's
he's a
prisoner of war or something.
And he's going to get deported, and they're fighting. It's like a landmark case of whether he gets to stay or not.
Yeah, and so like Darcy's like, yeah, no one got any interviews because I told them not to. And it's like, he's the lawyer. And then he's like, but let me sort something out for you. And then it cuts to Bridget like interviewing, and she's like the soul in like the, what's the word?
Yeah, so she's
the got the scoop.
Yeah, she's got the scoop, and she's kind of doing a like cutesy take on it. She's like, oh, he's quite dishy, isn't he, to a camera at the end.
Well, she's like, she goes like, and Kaffir, oh no, it was like, Eleanor, did you fancy Kaffir the first time that you saw him? and the woman's like, like, this is very landmark like human rights case. Mm-hmm. And then at the end she's like, and that's all from Bridget Jones, with a bit of a crush now, actually. And Mr. Darcy's like, getting in there.
So I was just looking at my notes and I was like, I really don't understand a lot of these. Right. So then she's back at her flat. It's her birthday. She's decided she's going to make a 3-course meal for her friends. And you know, sometimes you have food memories associated with films. This is one that I remember quite clearly, because like the soup. So she's like tied up some leeks.
Yeah, I remember that clearly as well.
And obviously the like string, the dye from the string like leaks everywhere. And it's just blue soup, and just like the dinner is terrible, and I just remember it. She's like searching in her fridge for tuna, which for a second, because I'm like so never eaten tuna out of a can, I was like, why is she looking in the fridge? Then Darcy turns up with like a copy of the paper, because obviously she got the scoop. Is everywhere.
The blender explodes on her, so she's covered in this kind of white creamy substance. She opens the door to Mark, and he's like, yeah, holding the newspaper, like, I wanted to congratulate you on being, you know, the first like the front page in.
Oh yes, this is it. This is where she like brings up the like paddling pool moment, and she's like, how old was I? And he was like, you were 4 and I was 8. And she's like, that's quite a big age difference. It's a bit pervy, isn't it? And then he goes, I like to think so. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, why? Why do they do this to Mark Darcy? There's no need.
This is not you. This is not you, Mark.
Also, then he takes his blazer off, and I was like, he's just so sexy without his blazer.
I mean, yeah, the kitchen scene where he's helping her with the food, that's quite hot. So then he looks at what she's making, and the soup is blue. And so he's like, do you have any eggs? So they're going to make an omelette instead.
And then her friends turn up. And I was like, he's so cute. He's so much, like, because her friends come in, like, and I, for some reason.
They're like, wait, what?
So he's like, will you be joining us? And he's like, looking at Bridget. And she's like, yes, of course. And he's so unsure of himself. And he's such
a baby Mark. And then they toast to Bridget. They're like, this is really lovely.
Bridget, we love. Just as she is.
and then like, she's like, don't look at Mark Darcy, don't look at him, don't look at him, because he's like, clearly, she's told her friends about this thing that he said. And then Daniel turns up, he's drunk.
With a bottle of wine. And he's basically like, let me talk to Bridge on her own. I notice he calls her Bridge and no one else does.
That's the sort of thing, because he has the audacity. People that are really audacious, they make up nicknames for people without asking.
And then he goes for a private chat with Bridget, and he's basically like really apologising. And then Mark's kind of like, had enough. And he's like, I'm going to go. And then he's like, Daniel is so rude, he's like, bye. And then he comes back up the stairs, and he's like, actually, no. Let's fucking fight.
And then he really comes in swinging.
Yeah, and then he's like, okay, Bridge, I just got to go sort this out. And they go into the street for a fight.
Mr. Darcy goes right for the face.
Yeah, it's like a proper cheek punch. He would have done a lot of damage. And then I was like, they start yelling cheat. And I was like, he is cheating. Because then Daniel grabs a metal dustbin lid. I was like, you can't use weapons. And then, like, there's a Turkish, is it Greek or Turkish restaurant?
I think it's a Greek restaurant. And, like, Tom goes in and he's like, fight! It's a real fight! So, and then the friends are like, who are we rooting for? And they're like, well, obviously Mark, because he didn't dump Bridget and sleep with some random American woman. And then Bridget's like, yes, but Mark did sleep with Daniel's fiance. And they're like, oh, yes, this is actually very confusing, isn't it? And then, they're like, grabbing each other's faces, they push through the door of the restaurant onto the tables while people are eating their dinner, and they end up going through the window of the restaurant. And I'm just like, how are you not cut to ribbon?
I know.
It's like a little tiny bit of blood.
Like, truly through the window, like, you
absolutely. Yeah, like onto the glass.
And then they kind of stop. And what is really interesting, because I looked at the plot notes of this online to see if I kind of needed plot notes, but then I ended up taking loads of detailed notes anyway. So they kind of pause, and then Daniel says wanker slightly like in a normal voice, and I think it's supposed to be that he says it under his breath, but Mark hears him, so the others don't hear him. So then Mark turns around and lamps him the final time, but it kind of looks like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think I heard him say wanker, but maybe.
Yeah, no, he says it, he definitely says it clearly, but I thought it was very clear to everyone.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether he really passes out or whether he pretends to pass out because he's a manipulative arsehole. Because then, obviously, Bridget, like, goes to him and is like, what's wrong with you? Like, you just ended up beating some random dude that you've stolen his fiance, and now you're coming and beating him up. What is wrong with you? You're insane. You act like a normal person, but you're not. And then Daniel says to her, he like wakes up conveniently at that point, and is like, come on, Bridget, let's go upstairs. If I can't make it with you, I can't make it with anyone.
Well, she's such a shit offer.
Like, he's just like, oh, like, I, you know, you're the only one that will it'll work with. And I, like, I remember, like, when I watched this before, I kind of thought that was quite romantic. Like, I was quite pro-Daniel originally. I mean,
I remember you were, and I was always anti-Daniel.
No, because I think I'm just, Hugh Grant is more my type than Colin Firth. And also, I just, like, quite, like, his kind of funny, like,
yeah, he's cheeky. Funny, but I remember being like, oh.
But yeah, actually, he is a sociopath. But at the time, I think that really shows in the choices that are made in my relationship.
But yeah, she's grown. She's a new woman. She's just like, it's just not a good enough offer.
For me, yeah, she's just like, nah. And then we cut to, it's Christmas again. She's inside. Because carol singers outside and she just shouts, bugger off!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because her and her dad are miserable on Christmas
just day. Sitting sad singletons together. And dad, her dad is watching the Julian's show again. I'm just like, if you want to get over this woman, you need to stop watching her weird telecom show.
No, he doesn't want to get over her. He wants her back. And then guess who walks through the door?
Mummy's home.
Yeah, mummy.
Oh, hello, mummy.
Hello, mummy. Bridget kind of sneaks upstairs to allow them, but she's sitting on the stairs listening.
And yeah,
she's just like, I'm really sorry, his fake tan was really bad in real life. And then he's just like, will you she's like, you still have to show me affection, but will you take me back? And then he's just kind of like,
this is such a Mr. Bennett move, man.
I literally, he's like,
I don't know, it's like, been really hard
to cry. And then he's like, only joking.
No, nah, I'm just messing with you.
I literally was like, Colin!
He's such a Mr. Bennett. Like, you think of him and he's quite, he's not as, like, kind of sassy as Mr. Bennett. He's more, like, low-key. But then he comes out with this shit.
There, it's the next morning. Pam and Colin are dressed up and Bridget's coming down in her pyjamas. And she, no, they're going to the Ruby wedding anniversary of the Darcy. And Bridget's like, why would I go to that? Mark Darcy's a horrible man or something. And then her mum, who had this information the whole time, told the actual truth. And this is the third ding dong repeating of the offensive line.
Ding dong. But like the wrong kind of ding dong. Ding dong.
Disapproving ding dong. And then she then repeats it, like, word for word as well. It's repeated word for word. It's
just in case we didn't get the racist joke the first time around or the second time around.
Did you forget about this?
You thought you were having a nice time watching this movie.
So it turns out Daniel actually slept with Mark's wife and
it was the other way around.
Yeah, so and then so she's like, oh my god, I have to go. She quickly gets changed, gets ready. And then so she's like, they're driving in the snow. And then her dad's driving too slow. So she makes him get out and swap seats. And I literally was like, this is genuinely reckless driving. In this. And they go to the Darcy's big fuck off house. This is, I suppose, Pemberley. She kind of talks to Darcy and kind of was like, oh, I got it wrong. And they kind of, and he's like, no, it was my wife, my heart. And it's so sweet. And then this annoying Natasha woman.
She's just like, she just, she just has nothing nice to say. She's always just like saying some kind of sassy. I mean, she's Caroline Bingley, isn't she? So she's always just got something to say.
She's quite snobby, yeah.
She's like, can I talk to you for a minute? And they go outside and they like hide behind the Christmas tree, a massive Christmas tree. And she's just like, well, you once told me that you liked me just as I am. And I just wanted to tell you that I also like you just as you are. Although I think you should reconsider the length of your sideburns.
I really do like that, because he should.
He should. And he just goes, crikey. And then he goes away.
Darcy's dad is making a speech, and it turns out that Darcy's just accepted a position in New York. America. God, these Americans are always stealing men.
You Americans.
These sexy Americans.
God damn it, you sexy Americans.
And then he then is like, oh, I can't, as we're amongst friends, because he's like, Natasha is also going to America because Darcy's been made partner. And he's like his partner in law, and hopefully that'll be, as we're among friends, I don't mind saying, that'll be official soon. He's actually proposed to her.
That's mad. Are you sure?
Well, yes, maybe she proposed to him. It again, because I thought in my head, in my memory, that was the dad implying that he wanted it to happen.
No. I knew that he said it was happening, but I don't know if he's proposed or she has.
I mean, we don't know the details, but
I don't think he's gone down on one knee. It's probably like she's been like, well, yeah, let's have a go at it.
Yeah, and then like, obviously, Bridget is heartbroken. And
she goes, no! Like in the middle of
really
the room.
Really horrific speech about where she tries to recover it. And then she's just eating Branston pickle from a jar in her flat. And I was like, is this what I think British people do?
And Out of Reach is playing. Out of Reach.
And she's just like, oh, life is shit.
She retitles her diary to Diary of Bridget Jones, Spinster and Lunatic.
Yeah.
Which also describes me. So.
And then her friends turn up and they're like, we're going to Paris.
Well, because she says, and this is a very, like, I think this is a great line by her, because they're like, oh, you don't really need Mark Darcy, do you? I mean, like, there's been all this hinting and sort of, like, mincing around it, but has he ever actually stuck his fucking tongue down your fucking throat?
Yeah, it's a beautiful line. I think it's one of the best in there. There's, like, there's about 10 lines of Bridget Jones that are iconic.
And I could see you saying that.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they're all shouting at her to get in the car. She's taking ages to find the fucking keys. And it's snowing. And then, oh yeah, we do see some clips of like Darcy in New York when she's eating her Branston pickle.
Oh yeah, he's like, no, he's like going to the airport and he's getting.
He's in New York, so we see some yellow taxis.
Oh right, yeah.
And then guess who's back again?
Marquis is back.
And
he should have said Darcy's back. God damn it.
Wide open. And then, yeah, and he's just like, hi. And basically, she's like, so you came back. Like, I love how she makes him say it. Do you know what I mean?
Cause yeah, well, she's like, so you're not going to America? And he's like, no, I guess not. And then the friends are like, they're about to kiss, and the friends are like beeping, and they're like, oi, are you coming to Paris or not? And she's like, no.
And then they just drive off. And I'm like, is all her shit in that car? Because, but anyway.
Where they're going, she doesn't need clothes.
And they go upstairs, and he's like leaning into it, and she's like, go get the sexy pants on. So she's trying to hold him off. So she goes off to get the sexy pants and like read some magazines. He finds her diary. Which again, I'm like, you shouldn't really read.
You're leaving it wide open on the
yeah,
side.
Yeah, she's like... leaving it wide open. But also, I would not read. I just think you can't be mad about something you've read in someone's diary. He's not mad.
Well, that's what Lady Susan said about her private correspondence. But
yeah, but
I mean, diaries are different.
Yeah, diaries are different because it's almost like a therapy. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, he's kind of walks out, and she thinks it's because he read all the bad shit that she wrote about him in the diary. So she decides to run out of the house in her leopard print satin pants.
I just heard Sylvia.
Yeah, her top, and then she runs.
No, not leopard print, zebra print.
And then, so she decides to run out. Then she first of all runs out just in the pants and the vest top. Then she's like, my feet are cold, so she puts. So she goes off, and she runs down the card with just her cardigan, the pants. She can't find him, and she's like, fuck. And then he just comes out of a, like, bougie London shop. You know those ones that would cost a fucking fortune. And he's like, hi. And she's like, it's only a stupid diary. Nobody should believe in things that are written in diaries. She's just doing the verbal diarrhea thing. And he's like, of course. That's why I bought you a new one. And then they kiss. And oh my god, such a sexy kiss. And then she's like, nice boys don't kiss like that. And he's like, yes, they fucking do. Oh,
cringe. I cringe so hard at that line.
I love it. I love it so much.
Horrible. If someone horrible, did that, horrible.
I would run away. But Colin Firth is allowed to do it because Colin.
I know, it was
a sexy nice guy. Oh,
it's the F word. It just doesn't fit with his character.
Yes, but it does, because when she was like, that's a bit pervy. He's like, I like to think so.
Yeah, but I just think it's like a thing that people wouldn't say in real life because it's too cringe.
And then that's the end. And then he wraps her in a coat, and. Oh, it's so cute.
this Lady Catherine de Bourgh like that? Don't you know it's because she's a Virgo? Why is Mr. Darcy a twat, my friend? Can't you see it's because he's a Capricorn? Astrology corner.
Star sign. I was thinking about this, and the other character's quite flat. So do you want to do the main three, or did you have others?
To be honest, I started thinking about it and then I forgot. So I'll just see what I come up with. Okay.
So Bridget,
I think she gives me kind of Sagittarius vibes because of her verbal diarrhea.
Yeah, she just wants to do stuff and get out there. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, she's just like kind of adventurous, and she's like got a bit of a devil may care attitude. She says stuff that she shouldn't necessarily say without thinking about it first. So I think she's a sack queen.
Daniel Cleaver.
I'm torn between Scorpio and Gemini. I think he's like very scorpionic vibes. He's obviously incredibly sexual. And he's also quite manipulative.
Next scorpion. I'm sorry, I just was imagining like a scorpion be like, yes.
But then also the kind of Gemini, because he's incredibly charismatic, and he can just work a room really well.
Mm-hmm.
But also he's kind of two-faced.
Mark Darcy.
He is, I think, a Capricorn.
Oh, I was toying Capricorn and Cancer.
Well, I always say that Mr. Darcy is a bit of a Capricorn, because they're across from each other on the zodiac wheel, and I think there's like kind of reflect different aspects of one another, and I do think that Mr. Darcy is very much Cancer / Capricorn.
Yeah, he's very sensitive.
He's got like a Capricorn rising and then like Cancer's sun or moon.
Yeah, is there anyone else you want to do, because I was like, I don't think there's anyone.
I think that her friend, Moaning Myrtle, what's her name? Jude, I think, is a Pisces.
Yeah. I think Tom's an Aquarius.
Maybe. I was thinking he could be a Leo, but that might be too simplistic. That's also opposite Aquarius, so there's kind of a...
Interesting. Shazza?
Bethany is an Aquarius sun and a Leo moon, I think.
Yeah, so maybe... What do you think Shazza is?
I think Shazza is a... Aries? / Sagittarius. I mean, again, she's got that verbal diarrhea, but I think also she just very much like, she just says what she's going to say, and she doesn't really like, she's just fully herself.
Yeah.
So I think she's definitely a fire sign.
The parents, maybe?
I think that her dad is a Libra.
Mm-hmm. I would have said her mum was more of a Libra, but...
I think that her mum's more of a water sign. She's like kind of Piscean, I think.
Yeah.
Because she's very mutable.
Yeah, as soon as you said water, I was like, yeah.
And her dad is an air sign, because he's kind of like Libras, they don't like conflict per se, but they're also like quite mental rather than emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. And then shall we leave it at that for them?
Yep, sounds good.
Everyone else? Rating out of 10, it's difficult because it is expensive. And it's
the highs and the lows.
And there is absolutely no reason to not have any diversity when you're putting something in metropolitan London.
Yeah.
In 2001.
Like, maybe because no people of colour would want to work on that because it was being racist. But
yeah,
hasn't stopped.
Maybe that would have helped them.
Yeah.
But also, it's got such a special place in my heart.
I know, it's such a funny one, because I think there's like, you know, Gen Z kids are going to watch this and be like, why does anyone care about this movie? It's shit.
I know, I'm going to get cancelled for liking it.
I know, it's such a difficult one, because it's so, like I say, it's so zeitgeisty, and like it was such a part of the early aughts kind of culture. Yeah. And the even the comedy, like the humour especially kind of like women's like books and TV and stuff. I mean, like, you see it also in like Lost in Translation, that's the name of our podcast, Lost in.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, and I think that's why we watch it fondly, because we lived through it.
Yeah, it's kind of like slightly quirky.
That's what it actually was like. Like, you don't know, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
That whole aspect of how people viewed people isn't being exaggerated.
No, and that was like the quirky, like that was the kind of like leading woman role, was this like slightly, she's not like other girls. She just says what she thinks, and she's not taking any bullshit.
Yeah.
But in a way that she's also like quite dysfunctional.
So it loses points for its general offensiveness and lack of diversity, but the soundtrack is amazing. Colin Firth is sexy. There's genuine chemistry between Renee Zellweger, I think, and both leading men.
Mm.
That you believe the romance is. The romance is. The comedy, when it's not being offensive, is very good, which is
I did laugh out loud like quite a lot.
It's such a shame because they didn't need it.
Like, they didn't need it at all.
You never need it, obviously, but like
they could have taken it away and it would have been
They weren't short on laughs. They didn't need the cheap shots.
Yeah.
So maybe an 8. I'm gonna give it an 8.
It would have been 7.
A 10 if it had not been like that. If it had taken away the cheap shots, and you know,
I think it's like such a snapshot of what the kind of values of the early 2000s.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a moment in time.
But I don't think that necessarily. I think that that's very nostalgic for us, obviously. And I think that's probably why it's brought it so high up, because I think if we watched, I mean, I know you love Dirty Dancing, but like, I think that someone that grew up in the 80s would
And I mean, the thing is though, I don't love it in the same way I love Bridget Jones, so I like it in the sense that it's a cheesy romance.
It's like it forms a part of your like understanding of the world, and I think these are very iconic films, so if you watch them so early on, it's like, and also because it's so part of the culture.
So that's au revoir from us. Check us out on Instagram at Austin_translation_pod or email us at austintranslationpod@gmail.com. Au revoir!